This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Hello, McLaren Honda fans. I have some big news today. McLaren Honda, along with Andretti, we're going back to Indianapolis. We're racing the Indianapolis 500 with guess who? Two-time world champion, Fernando Alonso. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Zach. Hello, fans. Unbelievable. It's a dream come true, you know, Indy 500. What a race to enter in the USA and hopefully win it, or try to win this fantastic possibility for me. And together with McLaren, Honda, and Andretti, we will try to have some fun and to enjoy racing. So yeah, let's see. And in Canada, we will be.
I hope we show everyone the trophy in Canada.
Very strong.
Hey there, welcome. It's Trackside on 107.5, 1070 The Fan. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight's program is coming to you from very close to 16th in Georgetown, from the IMS production studios, the IndyCar radio studios, thanks to Wally Levin and Chris Pollack and Rick Evans for getting us set up here. And yes, we do have plenty to get to tonight as we get set for another Verizon IndyCar Series race weekend coming up in Birmingham, Alabama. This weekend, the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, Sunday afternoon here on 1070 The Fan, and also on NBCSN, 3 o'clock Eastern airtime, about 3:30 green flag. We'll get into that and more in a moment, but we had some significant news last week that didn't quite make showtime last Tuesday, but that worked out well. We had plenty going on last Tuesday from recapping Long Beach and our fantastic charity event at Fast Times Indoor Karting as well. The news, and you just heard from two-time Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso and Zach Brown, former resident of Central Indiana, now one of the principals of Formula One McLaren, who will join us later on the show tonight, announcing that Alonso will compete in a partnership with Andretti Autosport with McLaren in this year's Indianapolis 500. Kurt, I have many, many thoughts, so I will save them, and I will start with you.
Well, I think this is a story that resonates on so many levels. I mean, we'll probably have another segment about this probably after.
Oh yeah,
after we talk with Zach Brown. But it's a kind of story that it's really difficult to get your arms around from various levels. Starting with the fact that a two-time world champion who has had his career pointed toward racing in Formula One at Monaco, he has decided that Monaco can wait another year. He'll compete in the Indianapolis 500 for the first time, and I think that raises the significance of the Indianapolis 500 on the global scale. He brings a uniquely global audience. We've seen stories written across the globe from places like Russia and India and all across Europe and Spanish Spain media outlets have been requesting credentials for the Indianapolis 500. These are all things that we've compared it to Nigel Mansell coming in 1993, but Mansell was a full-time participant in the IndyCar series at that point, and this is a one-off, so it's different in that respect, but mm-hmm. the interest for Mansell was off the charts. I mean, this will not be Nigel Mansell-like, but it'll be similar in that it draws a global audience. And it just brings another level of spotlight to what is going to be a great race. You know, we thought the 100th was a big deal, and it'll certainly be the marker for all future Indianapolis 500s. But the 101st is going to be bigger than the 99th, and Alonso's participation with Andretti will, and McLaren. We can't undersell the importance of having McLaren back at the Indy 500, a company that has won three Indianapolis 500s in its own right. So having the combination of those factors in play here is remarkable and certainly significant on all fronts.
Alonso himself is significant, but what you just hit on is what I think makes it a much more significant story is McLaren. It would be one thing if a current Formula One driver, a two-time world champion, decided to forego their biggest event and come over. That's significant, but even more so when the team itself says, no, I know they're not fully running the car. But we'll ask Zach Brown in a few minutes what their actual physical hands-on involvement is. But that the team itself has an interest. And the principal of the team has said, you never know. We might have interest in doing this more on a regular basis, not just the 500, but IndyCar. That's, I think, adds significant weight to this circumstance.
It does. And it... You know, they, you know the saying, it this is going to raise all the boats, and all the television numbers should be better because it's a global audience. Now, look, not, I don't expect people to necessarily to make the Indy 500 their primetime viewing, but it's certainly going to keep interest up as they went to Bahrain, easy for me to say, but as they were in Bahrain last week, Alonso's participation in the 500 dominated the conversation. It was, I think, arguably the biggest topic of the weekend.
Certainly.
I didn't listen to all the broadcasts, but it was certainly a large part of it. And, you know, the other drivers are talking about it. The team principals are talking about it. The manufacturers, I'm sure, are interested, and certainly the media is interested. So it is one of those topics that doesn't come along very often that will be good for everyone. Yes, it's a one-off deal, and in that respect, it's not much different than Kurt Busch's situation. When Kurt Busch got done with the 2015 Indianapolis 500, he went back to where he came from. But and Alonso will do the same. Although I saw Zach Brown mentioned in a story the other day that this may not be Alonso's only Indy 500.
He's not said, I want to participate in the Indy 500. He has said, I want to win the Indy 500 to go along with Monaco, and then I want to win Le Mans. And everything I've seen from him understands that it's unlikely that he's going to win it in his first try. This is to start that process of being able to win it at some point, from what I understand.
Well, bear in mind that Alexander Rossi, through circumstances, with very little advance notice about what the Indy 500 really meant and what it could do for him and how to race it and how to compete on an oval, all those things. Rossi didn't have much more experience, than Alonso. In fact, you could probably argue that Rossi had less experience, given how much seat time Alonso has had over the years, mm-hmm, in Formula One. So, I mean, just significantly more miles. He's such a student of the sport. I saw Zach Brown said he's watched probably 20 Indianapolis 500s here in the last few days. So that's it's going to be, regardless of how he performs and all that happens on the racetrack, this story is just going to be interesting to follow. And what have we got, 6 weeks here to kind of watch it unfold?
And we have seen great road course drivers pick up ovals. Some pick it up pretty quickly. Mansell was one of those that picked it up very quickly. I saw that David Hobbs on the telecast over the weekend said that the Indy 500 is like a road course, but with left-handers only, a little bit like Spa. And the difference is going to be the pack racing, or quote, similar to pack racing, just being bunched up and the turbulent and dirty air. That's not something you deal with on a high-speed road course quite as much, and there aren't people that are side-by-side for a little bit. But I have no doubt that he can figure this out. Or I guess I should say I have no doubt that he's likely to figure it out. Some guys do come and get spooked about it. That's what makes this so challenging. It's what makes it special.
That's right. There certainly has been a shift in how close cars race at Indianapolis since the 90s, so there probably is more of a challenge coming for a driver unfamiliar with ovals and certainly the kind of racing we've seen at Indianapolis in the last 4, 5, 6 years. But it is certainly a mountain that I think he can climb a long ways up. Do I expect him to win? No, I didn't expect Kurt Busch to win either. But Kurt Busch was at least in a camera shot at the end of the race. He was within a couple corners of winning the Indy 500 on his own. So, you know, it'll be a fascinating story to watch. And let's not judge success or failure based on necessarily if he wins or finishes second. I think it's a win for his brand if he comes and holds his own. And it's a win for IndyCar if it can properly acclimate a driver, and it'll be a win for Andretti and a Honda because they were able to attract one of the sport's great drivers. I don't know if he's the best driver in Formula One today, I mean, you got Vettel and you got Lewis Hamilton, but you certainly would put him in the top three or four.
There are a lot of people in the Formula One world that think, and this is something that needs to be put out there and talked about, if you don't follow Formula One, and you know, it's written, well, he hasn't scored a point all year and he's finished mid-pack and back the last 3 years. That's circumstances. The people that know Formula One still would say, and it's always debatable, but he's on that short list. He is still definitely in the top two or three or four drivers, and he was one of them mentioned for Rosberg's seat. If you gave him a fighting chance, things would be very different. And while he hasn't won the championship in a decade, I think he maybe won in 2005 and 6, it's been 3 or 4 years since he finished second. I think he's finished second three times in the Formula One World Championship. So it is, as you said, not exactly Nigel Mansell, because he was the reigning Formula One world champion, and he left. But it took some circumstances then. He wasn't really happy that Alain Prost was coming back to become his teammate, and this certainly took circumstances. We understand if he had an opportunity to be a regular podium finisher, if the Honda was up to power, he probably wouldn't be doing this. He'd be back to waiting until his career is over. But this is still more than Rubens Barrichello or any of the other Formula One drivers at the end of their career. He's still in the middle of his career, and by some in the Formula One world, this is not smiled upon. They're not real happy, no matter where he's at, that he's missing Monaco. And Bernie Ecclestone said, if I was in charge, I'd have done everything I can to stop this.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Ron Dennis, had he still been at McLaren, this wouldn't have been something that certainly wouldn't have been encouraged. Zach Brown, though, being, I don't want to say an Indianapolis guy, because he did live in Indianapolis or in Carmel for 20 years. Mm-hmm. He certainly grew up as a aspiring race car driver and wanted to compete in the Indianapolis 500. So his heart is here, even though he certainly loves Formula One and the opportunity he's got at McLaren. But this is a really cool thing on so many fronts. And just the idea of somebody with his skill set, with Alonso's, you know, his credentials and so forth. I mean, two-time world champion giving up the chance to run Monaco for a shot at another one of the world's really great races is it really makes you smile.
This is what we used to love to see back in the day, and circumstances have not allowed that to be possible to cross over. But here is a special circumstance that will allow this, and it's very unique.
You know, the other thing is, we keep talking about, you know, what does one of these situations do for IndyCar or the sport? And you look at how well Kurt Busch was welcomed. I don't think you can discount that in this example either, because you've had a team in Andretti which made Kurt Busch feel a part of the event, part of their program, shared information. Then you had a series, which I was not part of at that point in terms of leadership, but a series that I would say bent over backwards, but certainly did everything it could to welcome him mm-hmm. to the program. And I think the fan base. I mean, Kurt Busch, I heard him speak to it several times, that the way the media here and the fan base here appreciated his talent and his commitment and his effort was something that was really made him feel welcome. And I think that's not a coincidence in this situation. I think word got out. It went well for Kurt Busch that it wasn't an adversarial situation. He was given the same shot as everyone else. He was given proper time. Alonso will have track time before trying to qualify for the Indianapolis 500. And I think the team will do everything it can to make it special for him.
More thoughts on this, but you maybe can hear the phone ringing, and I think that's Zach Brown of McLaren. He'll join us next here on 1070 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Honoré, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. Trackside continues. 107.5, 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis and streaming on the internet at 1070thefan.com. Well, we've talked about it. Significant news here in the last week or so, and plenty to talk about as McLaren F1 is entering, along with partnership with Andretti Autosport, two-time Formula One World Champion Fernando Alonso in this year's Indianapolis 500. Zach Brown, the executive director of McLaren, a race driver himself and a longtime resident of these parts, joins us now from, I assume, in the London area. Thanks for staying up late with us tonight, Zach.
No problem. Good to chat.
Fernando has expressed interest in doing the 500 now that I've heard for at least the last couple of years or so. You came on board with McLaren late last year. Since you came on board, how long have you been thinking about trying to make this happen?
Well, I thought about it before I came on board. It was part of my decision-making process to join McLaren was I felt the brand race team had such great history in various forms of motor racing, having won Indianapolis three times, having won Le Mans, K&M, Formula 5000, that in the back of my mind, I thought there's so many great things that McLaren can do. What wasn't in my mind at the time was how quickly that could potentially materialize, and I did not think 2017 was an option.
When did serious discussions begin, or when did it look like you had a real chance for this year's race?
It all happened very quickly. I started kind of teasing Fernando before Australia, having no idea whether he would have any interest or not. As we know, some Formula One drivers have come to Indianapolis and have won. And then there's been quite a few that have gone home with their tails between their legs because it's quite a daunting place. And I wasn't quite sure where Fernando would be. And being the racer that he is, he kind of flirted back with me. And then in Australia, we had breakfast with Honda, and he told them of his desire to win the Triple Crown. And at that point, I thought, well, he really will do Indianapolis one of these days. And I teased around about doing it this year. Obviously, there's a conflict with Monaco, but we're in a unique position that we're not doing very well, as we know. And we spoke after Australia, and he said, hey, I'd like to do dinner in China Friday night, and I want to talk to you about Indy, and do you think 2017 is possible? And at that point, it was like getting whacked over the head with a with a pan going, wow, he wants to do it, but this is going to be a tall order pulling it off.
Bernie Ecclestone said over the weekend that if he was still in charge, he would have probably tried to stop that. Were there any significant roadblocks from Formula One or otherwise that made this difficult to do?
Not at all. In fact, we kind of took everybody by surprise. We didn't ask permission. I know the new management very well, and know them well enough that I knew they would see the positive elements of this for Formula One, which I think there's plenty. So in our quest to keep this very quiet and try and surprise the world, we didn't really tell anybody. And so we told them, and since then now they want to talk about how we can market Monaco and Indy the same weekend. So they're fully embracing it.
Zach Brown is joining us, the founder of Just Marketing International, based here in Indianapolis. It's now merged and moved on to another company, and he has moved on to bigger and better things himself as the executive director of McLaren. How much and how will McLaren be involved in preparing and running the car with Andretti Autosport?
Well, Andretti Autosport will take the lead. You know, Michael's calling the race. It'll be his team over the wall. We are sending out a small crew to support, so we will physically help turn some of the wrenches, and then we have some areas in which we think some of the technology that we develop and have applied to our Formula One car will be beneficial. So there'll be everything from our technology on the car to some of our people. We've got some people with some great IndyCar experience, but we also can't detract or remove any effort towards our Formula One. So it'll be people more back from the factory that have relevant experience. So you'll see a handful of McLaren people there, and some of which you'll recognize.
That's fantastic. More than just a marketing venture and just putting your name on the side of it, that the real is a real involvement involved. So along with that, could McLaren ever have an interest in a full-time IndyCar entry?
I would say yes.
Wow.
You know, we got to focus on what we have in front of us. I'd certainly like to see the Indy 500 be part of McLaren's annual racing efforts. When we go racing, we need to make sure it's something we can do competitively, that is commercially viable and fits our brand. We feel IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500 offer all those things to McLaren, but I'd say a full season program with McLaren is not yet under full consideration and would be years away, because that's a pretty tall order.
And you don't think this is just a one-time try for Fernando? He's not just said, I want to race in this. I want to win this.
No, he wants to win it. And, you know, while I think he'll have a chance, he's not coming in trying to do anything other than be competitive and learn. And as we know, it's a wild race and anything can happen. I think he'll have equipment that's capable of winning. He certainly has the talent, but he doesn't have the experience. And so we know at Indianapolis, there's been drivers like Nigel Mansell, who almost won it on his debut, mm-hmm. to Alexander Rossi, who did. And then we also know there's been three-time world champions like Nelson Piquet that didn't have such great success at the Speedway. So I think he's very focused. He's confident in his abilities. But he knows that place can bite you, so he's got to build up to it and not try and prove to the world how fast he is too quickly.
And he wants to do Le Mans, too, and win Le Mans. Can you help along with that as well?
Well, today McLaren aren't running in Le Mans. Ultimately, that would be a decision made by our automotive group, but we certainly have a great history there, and I think that is a race that we can be competitive in. I think it's commercially viable, and I think it definitely fits our brand. So it ticks all the right boxes, but that would ultimately be in a automotive decision.
I love that. Are you coming to Barber with Fernando this weekend?
I'll be landing Saturday with Fernando.
That's great. Is there a date yet for when he will test at IMS?
There is, but we're not yet revealing that, as we are working very closely with IndyCar. And we're trying to see how can we expose the fans to Fernando Alonso and what are some fun and unique ways to do that, both live and digitally and through social media. So I don't want to spoil that announcement, as that is something that we plan to share with the fans.
You touched on this, and we obviously understand here in Indianapolis the significance for IndyCar and the 500. It's huge for our community, and I believe it's also very big for McLaren and F1, and certainly you do too. How is this going to help Formula One?
Well, I think there's been more conversation. I've actually seen some statistics that Fernando's announcement generated in the last 4 hours more conversation about Formula One than Formula One did all of last year. So I think what's going to happen is fans are going to want to see McLaren, one of the greatest Formula One teams, with Fernando Alonso, one of the greatest drivers ever, competing in this iconic race. And so I think that's going to turn in a lot of viewers. I think that'll be then good for Formula One in North America. Mm-hmm. It's obviously great for IndyCar. The feedback from fans and sponsors has been fantastic. So I think really everybody wins in this. And then, of course, not really relevant to Indy, but we are putting Jenson Button back in the car in Monaco. And that's quite a story. You know, there's a lot of Jenson Button fans out there. So I think, fortunately, this has created a lot of exciting news for people around the world.
Will the car have the same sponsors mostly as the Formula One car, or will there be some new partners potentially brought on here at Indy?
You'll definitely see our existing partners on our Formula One team on the car, but we are open and having conversations to some new partners who want to jump on the opportunity and join McLaren, Honda, and Andretti in our journey with Fernando. So it'll be a combination of.
I could ask you many more questions, but you've been kind enough to stay up late with us and join us, so I'm going to let you go. And we'll look forward to seeing you this weekend. We'll hopefully talk to you on the NBCSN broadcast along with Fernando this weekend. Thank you so much, Zach. We're very excited.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Zach Brown is the executive director of McLaren, and he has helped broker the deal to bring Fernando Alonso to the Indianapolis 500 this year and step out of the car for their biggest race in Monaco. And as Zach mentioned, they've got a pretty good fill-in. Another world champion, Jenson Button, can stand in his place. As he said, he wasn't retired. He was on hiatus or sabbatical, and he's back for at least this one race this weekend. We'll continue to react, and we'll get into some other stories. We have a driver change for Barber this weekend in IndyCar. We'll tell you about that and address some of your tweets that have come in already, and we'll get to some tonight by the end of the show. Stay with us. It's Trackside on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. With Kirk Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Good to chat with Zach Brown and get some more information from him about what is in store regarding Fernando Alonso. And we'll get back to this topic, and I know you have a lot of questions, too. Not you, Kurt. You may have questions, but the listeners have some questions that we will address.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And also talk about what we've learned so far in just a little while, but want to hit on some other news going on in a moment. Before I forget, I need to mention, well, first I need to thank everyone that came out to Fast Times Indoor Karting last week to support the Kevin Lee Grand Prix. More importantly, honoring Ben Burchard and also benefiting Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Hospital. I don't have a final tally yet on what we've raised, and one of the reasons we don't have a final tally is we're still collecting. Fast Times came up with another Indy racing experience, two-seater ride, and this might even be, I was talking with Brian last week, it might be one of those deals where you're driving the car. You know, they have different kinds, where you're a rider and whether you're a driver. So you might call tonight, if you're listening live, or tomorrow morning. I think they open at like 11, and they're planning on cutting this off at noon. If you're listening to the podcast, we left it go for an extra day in case people get us on Wednesday morning on the podcast. But we're doing an auction for an Indy Racing Experience two-seater ride, so you can call and confirm whether it's the ride-along or whether you're driving. Four pit and paddock passes that Kurt is going to help secure for us for a 500 practice day, and then I'll walk around with you if you want to and give you a little mini tour, and we can, I'm sure, get Kurt out there at some point, and we'll stop and chat with some people. You are welcome to come in studio for an episode of Trackside as well. So all of that, and the last I saw on Saturday was $600. I think the two-seater ride is like a $500 face value, so you're already getting beyond that, so it's still a good value. So call Fast Times if you'd like to make a bid. They're still open now tonight, 317-566-0066, 566-0066. If you are listening early on the podcast Wednesday morning, you can send an email, and they can have a timestamp of what's going on. And just call them and ask them what the bid is at. If you want to email it overnight, then I would say, you know, go ahead and start with 625 or something like that. The last I heard was 600. So it's fast@ftik.com, fast@ftik.com through noon tomorrow. And thanks to everyone that helped us out from a corporate perspective, like Sullivan Steakhouse. I'm a veteran now. You remember last year I forgot to eat at my own event? Well, I ate before it started.
Okay, good.
I ate before it started.
One of the first rules of media effort.
And I did actually get in the cart at my event this year, so that was fun. I think I was last in my group, so that was good, too. You know, I just wanted to let everybody feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
You think?
You were probably in with
I was in with the pros
ringers,
and Kimberly Bogle, who is also faster than me, who I don't think in that session punted her boyfriend, Maddie Brabham, but she was quick enough to punt him if she chose. So that was impressive. And Maddie was the overall winner. Maddie was the winner in the final race, which was really, really good, beating IndyCar Stig and Luke Durrett in the finals. And that was a fun race to watch. All eight were really, really quick in that event. So thanks to Crown Liquors, Sullivan Steakhouse, Redemption Ale Works. I did sample some of their product after the show was over. Thanks to the Caldwell Companies, Jennifer and Don Caldwell, for supplying the T-shirts that we gave away, and their businesses, Subway in Hobart and Valparaiso, and Jackson Hewitt Tax Services and Caldwell Realty. So thank you so much. We look forward to the third annual Kevin Lee Grand Prix. Bigger and better coming up next year. Now, Kurt, let's get to news of the day as we get set for this weekend's race at Barber for J.R. Hildebrand. It's been the break he's been looking for to get a full-time opportunity again this season. Now he has to deal with a literal break, and he won't be able to race.
Yeah, what is the official breakage, according to the
a
press
release?
A bone
in his left hand, I think, is what's all. Yeah, a bone in Hildebrand's left hand was broken in a final lap incident at Long Beach.
So from a team perspective, they're going to run Zach Veach in this race. And then at Phoenix, the goal, we'll put the quote marks around goal, is to have Hildebrand back in the car for Phoenix. Obviously, it's less of a left-hand grind on the oval, but it's still obviously very taxing. He's obviously got a lot of pain still he's dealing with. So it's not going to be easy if he comes back at Phoenix.
It's probably one of the tougher ovals, I would think.
And it's a tough oval, but yeah. You know, you can do it a little bit more one-handed, although I wouldn't advise it. But you've got a situation where this is probably going to linger for a little bit, and he may not be at full strength for another 6 weeks or so, at least.
Very, very tough to hear that for JR. You wanted him to get an opportunity because they knew it wasn't just him getting back into full-time racing. They have new engineers. It's a new environment there. So they were grading themselves, I think, fairly on a curve to understand that this was going to be a process. And what we see in June and July is not necessarily what we're going to see in April. And now this sets them back a little bit. So that's the negative, but a huge positive for Zach Veach. I know Ed Carpenter and the team was hugely impressed with him in their test last fall, and I think he was given serious consideration for one or both of those rides, and now he gets a chance to get that first IndyCar race out of the way before the 500,
yeah,
which is huge for him.
It does. It relieves a lot of the stress buildup he'll have coming into the race, and I know he's a professional and he's been at this craft in the junior ranks for some time, but still to get the IndyCar race debut out of the way before he got to Indianapolis was really important. Whether he admits it or not, it'll be important for him, and it'll be important for the team and to see see his energy and so forth. So it'll be good for Zach, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the car moving on to Phoenix if JR can't go there. I wouldn't be quick to say that Zach will be that driver.
Could be Spencer Pigot.
Could be Spencer Pigot.
Yeah, I would think there's a real good chance, because remember, Zach is driving for a different team in the Indianapolis 500. Same engine manufacturer, so that certainly helped that he's driving a Chevy for Foyt. But, Ed Carpenter has also been public that he would love to field Spencer in the 500. Feels like he's deserving that opportunity, but they didn't win the auction for the extra KV chassis, and they don't have the partnership right now to really do it the way they want. So as of now, Spencer does not have an opportunity in the 500. By the way, we'll get to the updated list of the 500 and talk about some fallout from the Alonso news and some other announcements last weekend with that as well. But let's spend just a moment before I forget about this race coming up this weekend. This event, when IndyCar first announced they were going to go there, there was much fear that, okay, we understand why you're going to go. It sounds like a good event, but this is a motorcycle track and they're not going to be able to pass there. And it has been anything but that. It has been a fantastic race most every year, and you're not going to get a better road course race ever than what we saw last year at the end.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, from a fan standpoint, it's such a picturesque racetrack. Such a, we compare it, and I don't think this is a fair comparison, but we've talked about it being like the Masters. And I would only say that because the greenery and the flowers and the trees are in full bloom, and it's just a beautiful setting. It's spring has developed quicker in the south than it is up in the northern half of the country. So it's a beautiful setting. There are at least two, and you could argue maybe three spots that are just great to watch race cars. Coming through what is turn one, two, and around and towards turn three with great not only spectator mounds, but video board. The cars look and sound cool there. And then there's a couple other spots, and then what I call the backstretch or the back part of the facility Another great spot, and especially when it's warm. A lot of trees back in there. People sit up underneath the trees, so a lot of shade, and it can be difficult to judge how large the crowd is until you get back there and you see, you know, 30, 40 deep in some cases. So just a really good atmosphere for a race. And we talk about it all the time when we're talking about this event. They have a terrific museum, especially if you like motorcycles. There are some cars in there as well, but...
And there are a lot of cars. It's significant.
Yeah, it actually is surprising how many cars
because
they have.
I'm not really a motorcycle guy, and I am hugely entertained by the Barber Museum with the cars.
Well, it's one of the best car museums that I think exists. Mr. Barber has put quite a collection together, and that's a must-stop on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get to turns 1 and 2, 3, that complex, and you want to get to the back part of the racetrack and the fan zone back there. And obviously it's always entertaining to be in the paddock, but the museum is a big stop on that tour.
And the great thing about that backstretch is you see the cars pass back and forth several times out of 3 and 4. They go up to that hairpin. You're going to see them there. They go back down that way. They come back past you again. So you can see the front stretch as well. So I think you're getting 3 looks at them, and you can see an awful lot of the track. When people ask me what event, if you're going to travel to one, should you get to, Barber is always going to be high on the list.
Well, and the other
thing is,
for
a lot of different reasons.
People, I'll add another reason, is I think Birmingham, and we've said this before.
It's a great city.
It's one of the most underrated cities in the country. I don't know that I'd ever heard anybody say, man, you ought to go to Birmingham. It has a lot of history. It has a lot of, elevation changes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a rolling through the hills kind of city. It has great restaurants. I mean, I've been to 6 mm-hmm. or 7 really good restaurants. The area down in the south part of town, I was trying to think of the name, Stamford. Isn't that the name of the college? Yes, down there on the south.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a beautiful part of Birmingham, just that south part. It's just really nice.
So we look forward to that coming up this weekend. Practice starts on Friday morning. It's also a Mazda Road to Indy weekend, so USF 2000, Pro Mazda, Indy Lights are going to be there. For Indy Lights, it's their 400th race, race number 2. They have a doubleheader, and we will have coverage of that on NBCSN on a tape delay basis. I believe the second Indy Lights race with highlights from race 1 is going to air at midnight Tuesday night Eastern time. So midnight Tuesday, 12 a.m. Wednesday Eastern time, so 9 p.m. Tuesday night Pacific time. But set your DVR for longer because the NHL playoffs are underway, so it's always possible that it gets pushed back just a little bit. We'll be on air. No practice coverage this Friday, so IndyCar.com and their YouTube channel and normal outlets with IndyCar Radio and the Verizon IndyCar app will have that on Friday. We will have very, very close to live qualifying coverage on Saturday. So stay with me. Here's what you need to do. Just make sure you're about 15 minutes behind on Twitter. And if you're like me, I'm normally 2 hours behind on Twitter. I go through it in bunches.
Yeah.
I'll stay off it for 3 or 4 hours and then sit down and catch up over an hour as I watch something on television. So qualifying Saturday afternoon, 3:15 local, 4:15 Eastern. We go on the air at 4:30 Eastern. So only about 15 minutes delayed. And then my guess is we'll catch up by the end of it. But if you get really offended if you see something on Twitter before you see it on your television, just make sure you're at least 15 minutes delayed on Twitter, and all will be new in your world.
By the way, the college is Samford, not Stamford. It's S-A-M-4, but a beautiful place. One of the prettiest.
Stamford's Connecticut.
Well, I was just in where is your NBC Sports home?
Stamford, Connecticut.
Stamford. So I was caught on my travels this week. I was at your home base of mm-hmm. NBC Sports on I don't know which day it was. I've lost track of my days already. But Samford, beautiful campus there in Birmingham.
Stamford, also one of the fictional homes of the headquarters in the TV show The Office.
That's right.
Which, again, I'm still not all the way through yet. I'm on, like, season 5.
It's a great show.
I started after they had already finished. But, I get there. I'm a little bit behind on things. The race, by the way, Sunday afternoon, here on 1070 The Fan, 3 o'clock Eastern airtime, same on NBCSN, 3:30 coverage this weekend. Formula One is off, so Lee Diffie is back with us, Townsend Bell and Paul Tracy in the booth, and me, Marty, Katie, and Robin Miller on pit road, and we'll hope to talk to Zach Brown and Fernando Alonso, who are going to be there this weekend as well.
I think I can make that happen.
We like that, and we'll have more stories to get to on that front. In fact, let's do this next. Let's get into, before we get back to Alonso and some questions on that, obviously, someone made a bit of a sacrifice to make this happen, and I think it's going to help him in the long run, and we'll tell you who still is looking for a seat and what seats are available for the 500. Coming up next, Trackside 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
So much to discuss on the program tonight. We'll continue to try to roll through it, and we will get some of your tweets coming up at KevinLee23 a little bit later on. We talked about Fernando Alonso. We'll talk more about him specifically. But, Kurt, we need to get into how this deal actually happened, and it had a lot to do with Stefan Wilson.
Well, it did, because Stefan was working on a program that would take the sixth car, and not necessarily in terms of importance, but the sixth one to be announced by Andretti Autosport, and its Honda program. So Stefan Wilson was working towards that in conjunction with Honda. Honda has a fixed number of engines that were going to be available for the Indianapolis 500 this year. 18 is that number. 17 of them had been confirmed, the latest being Jack Harvey's deal in the what we'll call the fifth Andretti Autosport car.
And I keep forgetting to mention this. By the way, we'll talk with Michael Shank a little bit later on in the show. He is co-fielding that entry with Michael Andretti, which on another week, that in itself would have been very huge news. It's gotten kind of shuffled aside with the Alonso news.
Yeah,
please continue.
I would have liked to have seen that wait another day. But in terms of – so Michael Shank – and Stefan Wilson, remember that Michael Shank had fielded Justin Wilson's sports car team, and so Michael Shank was working with Stefan Wilson to put together a deal with Honda and Andretti at the 500. But because Honda was limited to 18 engines for the 500, and the Stefan deal was not yet finalized, I guess is the best word, maybe it was close or just hadn't been announced. Anyway, it was the last one unconfirmed. All the parties to be went together and started having this conversation about Stefan Wilson giving up his seat or his opportunity in the Andretti car and the Honda engine so that this deal with McLaren and Fernando Alonso could come together. And I think, well, I know there are some things that have been promised to Stefan Wilson to make sure, and his sponsors, by the way. Mm-hmm. He had sponsorship lined up. And I think it'll end up being, I can't give the details, partly because I don't know them completely, but second of all, you know, I've been asked not to speak to them. They'll be revealed at a certain time. But there are a lot of good things that'll happen for Stefan, for his sponsors, as we move toward the 2018 Indianapolis 500, and I think this all but assures, barring something out of the ordinary happening, of course this was out of the ordinary, but Stefan will be in an Andretti Honda in next year's Indianapolis 500, and over the next year and a half, the sponsorship package will be honored for its willingness to do the what was best for the Indianapolis 500. And look, I know people have said, you know, this is this was unfortunate for Stefan, but Stefan, he's a smart kid. He's a kid. He's not a kid, but he is to us as you and I go. But you know, he knows what's good for the Indianapolis 500. He's heartbroken that he's not going to compete in this year's race, but he knows the Fernando Alonso thing is too important for IndyCar as a whole. And he also made a business decision for what's good for himself and his sponsors. I think his sponsors are going to get tremendous value out of IndyCar racing over the next year and a half. And I think he'll he'll still have a good ride for next year's race.
I think that has a lot to do with how this can work out to be good for Stefan in the long run. I know it stinks right now. And by the way, I had invited him out last week to Fast Times. I sent him a text on whatever Tuesday morning and didn't hear back from him. About halfway through the show, he sent me a text and said, apologies, I'm just now getting to this. I'm so sorry I couldn't make it out. We've got a lot of things going on.
Yeah,
And then the next morning, I see what's going on, and I text, but yeah, I see you're fine. And I already told him, because I knew he was trying to button up his deal. I knew he was very close to having something done. But here would be my hope. You know, he's done a great job with his partners, the Indiana Donor Network and Buy Gap Guard, which is a regular Pelfrey. I think Dale Pelfrey owns that company, and they're involved in some of the junior categories. He's done a great job to make that valuable for them right now. And as you said, they're going to get some real bonus material out of this. And I'm hoping, maybe I'm naive in this, that he gets more than the Indianapolis 500 next year. I'd love to see him get a 3-race opportunity. Or maybe it's just a little bit more certainty and you're not announcing it in April and you can do some testing early in the season. Give yourself a better chance of competing instead of just thrashing to do this one race a year. Maybe you can grow on that a little bit. It's probably too much to ask and hope for that there's a little sticker on the Alonso cars, but it's an Andretti car. And I've seen Michael say, no, he's going to be in our car in 2018. So something more can come from this. And in reality, for those sponsors, they have gotten more attention than they might have being on his car. And I think they still will. And he'll be able to visit with them throughout the month.
And not just that, what he did for the greater good will, I say a resume, but it'll go on his record, if
you will.
People
are going to want to help him even more. And they've already wanted to help him because they like him.
Yeah,
and they respect him.
So one of the ways, if you want to help Justin, I mean, Stefan, it's easy. It's almost they're kind of the same person in terms of their demeanor, in terms of their height, in terms of just how much people like them. So excuse me when I sometimes will slip and call him Justin, but and he takes it as very flattering, by the way. But if you want to help Stefan, one of the ways. You and I had a direct impact on this as we helped people last year at the Carb Night Burger Bash, invited people to sign up to become donors. I became one as well and at the Burger Bash. And this, you can become part of the organ donation program. And that's all the sponsorship is looking for anyway, is to sign people up. And you can do so at the Carb Night Burger Bash May 26th downtown at Pan Am Plaza.
Okay, we need to step away for just a moment. Michael Shank coming up in a little bit, but two more things I want to get to regarding Stefan Wilson and the questions that I'm getting most frequently. We will ponder on for a moment why Stefan and not someone else, and why couldn't he go somewhere else? I think many of us know the answer, but we're going to let Kurt start off on that and try to explain it for those who are asking those questions. Stick with us. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Eli Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Well into hour number two, Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan. By the way, next week is a little bit TBD. If there is a Game 5 in the Pacers-Cavs series, that would be Tuesday night, so we will shift to Monday night. Next Monday night from 7 until 9, if the Cavs win the next two, then I think we might just go ahead and run the show on Tuesday night. So you need to check in with Twitter at KevinLee23 to see how that all works out. But assuming, hoping the Pacers win at least one of the next two, then we'll talk to you Monday night at 7, recapping what happens at Barber and more on some of the topics we've been talking about tonight. We were talking about Stefan Wilson's circumstance, being asked to step out of the car, and for the greater good, he does so. And the question many are asking, a couple of questions, and Kurt, we start with this one. Stefan Wilson was linked with Michael Shank. That was the link with Justin Wilson, and that's where things were headed in a partnership with Andretti. Why was it Stefan Wilson rather than, say, Jack Harvey asked to give up the seat for Alonso?
Well, as to that point, because of Fernando's program coming in, it needed to be linked up with Andretti fully. So
more directly.
Yeah. So the sixth car in that program that Fernando will be occupying became an Andretti entry as opposed to a Shank entry as designed. So that left open the opportunity for Michael Shank's team to move over to Jack Harvey's program, and they accepted that deal. And that's, you know, another part of the deal. Shank could have said no. I mean, I think at that point there still could have been an opt-out if they had already signed a deal. But graciously, Michael Shank moved over to Jack Harvey's rookie program, and I think that will be good for that team. You know, as you say, bringing Michael Shank into the program is really good for IndyCar, and I think you will continue to see more involvement from Shank. You know, there was another guy who handled it pretty gracefully a couple years ago when there wasn't enough engines for him to field his own program. That he didn't, you know, go kicking and screaming. He made his point and went about his business in sports car racing and very successfully. And so people remembered that, and that was had a lot of goodwill and a lot of people on this side of the program working on his behalf to get him hooked up.
So the second question would be regarding Stephen Wilson. Is there are not 33 announced car and driver combinations? People are asking me, why can't he get one of the others that's still to be determined?
Well, he could, but what we know at this point is it's not going to be a Honda entry, and I think, you know, that's where his...
He's been linked with Honda. And they may be financially supporting it. I don't know. Or he may just decide, I'm better off staying with Honda because if I leave, maybe I lose my spot, because you want to run with Michael Andretti.
Sure.
And Andretti Autosport when you do get the opportunity to run.
So I suppose he could, but what have we seen? 32? Is that what we've seen in terms of confirmation? I could go through the list, but... I think
we're really more at 31. So here's what we have. We have the 21 that are racing at Barber, 21 cars racing at Barber this week, plus Zach Veach, recently confirmed with Foy, Jack Harvey with Michael Shank and Andretti.
Fernando Alonso. That's three.
Gabby
more.
Chavez was confirmed in the last week with Harding Racing and Larry Curry. Juan Pablo Montoya, Oriel Servia, Jay Howard, Pippa Mann, Sage Karam, that's 30. That's nine more. Buddy Lazier would be 31. And then Juncos has two cars, which could get to 33. So it's still tenuous because those haven't been announced at this point. And Kyle Kaiser told us on the show, a lot of people assumed it was him. They don't have the budget for it at this point. If Juncos can't do two, then I think you're looking for getting a car to Ed Carpenter Racing to have, because remember, it's not going to be a Honda. They are tapped out. It sounds like they really wanted to stop at 17, but maybe because of their relationship with the Wilson family, they decided to go an extra for Stefan, and they also feel the same way when it's regarding Fernando Alonso, but they're not going to do another one. So I think we can forget about any extra car from Dale Coyne or Schmidt-Peterson. So we're looking at the Chevy teams at this point. Could Foyt do another one? I don't know. Harding has they have two cars, I believe.
They do.
So I suppose.
New cars.
Yeah, I suppose they could. You know, maybe Ganassi does a partnership with Gary Peterson for Sebastian Saavedra. I think Gary has a car. Or Gary could have someone run that car.
That's right.
Maybe Gary is teaming with Juncos. I think you're going to see Sebastian on the grid.
I think so.
I think
too.
He's going to have a deal there. So. That's kind of what we're looking at as far as drivers that still are looking for something. We've got Matty Brabham. We've got Spencer Pigott.
James Davison.
We've got James Davison. We've got Kyle Kaiser, I mentioned. We've got some veterans like Alex Tagliani we haven't talked about. I have no idea if he's trying to make something happen this year or not. He's very busy, and I think Canadian stock cars and some different things. You know, you still see Tristan Vaudier around. Some of that's in his sports car roles. People, I think, are asking Ryan Briscoe if he's interested. I'm not sure if Ryan is interested.
He was at one point. I talked to him at Long Beach. There was a point at which he was really close. I don't want to use the word really close. He was in discussions about a ride.
Okay.
I sense that time has come and passed.
People are going to call Townsend Bell and ask him if he's interested.
So
then there's some of the Indy Lights guys, you know, from last year, like an R.C. Enerson who did a couple of IndyCar races, or Felix Sorales or Dean Stoneman. So there are several drivers out there that are possible. But it looks like if Juncos can do two cars, that's it. That's the list.
You brought up Lazier, and I don't know where their program stands at the moment. But did you see that that Buddy's son, mm-hmm. Flynn, who I've met,
He's still in high school, right?
Will be running the USF 2000 race this weekend at Barber Motorsports Park. So
for a really good team, Newman Walks.
That's right.
He's going to run both races.
He's done. Tell me if this sounds familiar. He's been very good at downhill skiing,
mm-hmm.
And he's got some car experience. So we'll see where this goes. But
and hasn't Bob told you before that that's one of the ideas in this, that they want to have a team for when Flynn is ready?
Yes, Bob and Buddy have both talked about that. We've talked extensively about that, in fact, that they're building a foundation so that Flynn has the opportunities that the father and his son, meaning Bob and Buddy, can deliver for their son. Meanwhile, you still got Jacques Lazier, who's probably not in the mix for this Indy 500, but still firmly believes that he's every bit ready to step into a program, thought he was going to have a program this year, is in basically the best shape I've ever seen him in. He's my buddy as well, but we forget about Jacques sometimes. Jacques is really would still like to have a racing career. A
couple of tweets regarding the 500. Kurt Hamblin asked if there isn't a 33 car count yet, can't someone else give Wilson a ride? We talked about that and addressed it. How realistic would a full season at Shank be for Stephen Wilson? We can ask Mike in a few minutes if he has any interest in potentially doing a full season at some point. Christopher Logan asks, in the current flurry of entrant news, where are we in the race to 33? There's your update. Could we see bumping? Partially, well, we're not going to see bumping. We could. You know, and to be honest, I don't get excited if it's just one bump. I don't know why, but I want two. I just feel so bad for that one guy or girl, that one team, and oftentimes that one is, you know, it's not that close. It's, what was it, Michelle Jourdain a few years ago with Ray Hall. They were just having problems. We know Michelle is a competent driver, and that team is very good, but there was something going on. You know, did the chassis have a crack in it? I forget what it was. But just sending one home, it's not the way it used to be, and I miss it. There are some things that are better than they used to be. This is one of those that we wish was a little bit different, but it's the way of the world today. You can kind of forget about, for now, qualifying being a bumping show.
Yeah, I agree.
That's filling the field.
Yeah, it's filling the field, and then it's sifting through the through the order and which order these cars and drivers line up.
Correct. Getting your starting position. It's what it's about, which is what it is for the other races and what it is for most NASCAR races today, what it is for Formula One races today. That is the economic environment that we're in for the moment. All right, let's talk to Michael Shank. Let's find out about how his deal came together after being on the outside looking in, looking for an engine a few years ago, and what he's expecting about his first opportunity for the Indianapolis 500 as a co-entrant. That and more all on the way, and we have an announcement for Back Home Again in Indiana we will discuss. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Well, there's been quite a bit happening in the last week in the IndyCar world. We've already talked with Zach Brown about McLaren coming in, and also we're very excited that Mike Shank is going to be involved in this year's Indianapolis 500 as well. The longtime sports car owner, former driver, is entering a car in partnership with Andretti Autosport to field the number 50 Honda for Jack Harvey, and Mike joins us now. How are you? And congratulations. Safe to say, this has been in the works for a little while.
Man, I tell you, this is the craziest world we live in sometimes, guys. I mean, first of all, just thanks for having me. And a lot went on in the last 2 weeks, and it's worked out really, really well. And I got kind of caught up in that whole Alonso deal in some crazy ways that we can talk about someday. But I'm just proud to be able to do it. We worked super hard here at Michael Shank Racing over the years to build this business, and finally to be able to run, in my mind, the greatest race in the world is crazy. It's just awesome.
So we need to go back 5 years or so. Maybe it was in 2011 or so that you really started looking into it and talking about it. And you had always been interested, I know, in being involved with the Indianapolis 500. It looked like it was going to happen. Ultimately, it did not because you weren't able to secure an engine lease. How difficult was it to put that disappointment and, I would assume, some anger away to continue working to get this done ultimately?
I had a lot of anger. I was really unhappy, and not only that, I had to go tell my wife we were going to lose over $100,000 selling the car.
Yeah,
it was not a good day, and I was really disappointed in not being able to run. It was a lot different world then for me back then. You know, I had established my business as a really good sports car program from 2004 all the way to today, but at that point, we had already run the Rolex 24. We had tons of good results. I was at the time was a factory Ford supported team on that side. I couldn't get anything but a Lotus, but I still pushed to try to make it work. And ultimately, it just didn't. I wasn't willing to take the partners and driver I had at the time and say, guys, you know, they may not let us run the whole race. It's possible we could get black flagged for being too slow. And you know, I've paid my dues for 20 plus years at the time. And I didn't need to do that, and I didn't want to do that. And I regrouped and put my head back down on the sports car side and kept building relationships and kept networking for a way to get back in.
And I don't think Paul Tracy would have accepted that either. And to be honest, I read a story a couple of days ago, and I don't know if it was public and I've forgotten it or never knew about it. And I've spent a lot of time with Paul in the last 5 years, but I didn't know that he was lined up to be your driver that year.
Yeah, he was. We worked, you know, again, he had Brian Marks, who works at Rahal's now. Mm-hmm. And he and I and Brian were trying real hard to put that program together, and we were very, very close. And Paul drove for me in Daytona Prototype a couple different times, and he and I really got along well. I mean, I think he's a hoot. I think he's great.
Yes, he is.
I was hoping to be able to do it. It didn't work out. And the good thing is I made sure my sports car program never got touched or harmed in the process, and we got to work. And then in 2015, I switched to Honda, and that really started a whole new world for me and really what kind of set the stage to what we're at next month, you know?
I guess I don't know if Kevin's ready to transition. I'm ready to hear more about how you decided that Stefan was kind of your guy to start the process and just how much affection you have for that family and how that program came together.
Well, man, I tell you, I don't even know where to start. A lot of people in racing, our sport close, know how close we were to Justin and still are to his wife and girls. I mean, Justin drove for me on and off for 10 seasons in Grand-Am and IMSA now. He drove for me the year he passed away at Sebring in my Ligier P2 car. And I got to know Steph during that process and watched him kind of through Indy Lights. Didn't have anything to do with him, but he's cut from the same exact cloth that Justin is. I mean, the same. He's just a touch bit taller, actually, unfortunately. Hmm. But, you know, the tough part is, you know, Steph came to me, actually Sam Schmidt and Steph came to me a few weeks ago, now almost a month ago now, to try to put something together. And I was fortunate that through my relationship with Honda, I was able to talk with Art St. Cyr, and he decided he'd get me a motor, even though they were kind of maxed out. Art and the guys and Steve Erickson, those guys really understood how much of a dream it was for me, and we had most of the dough together, and we went down that path. And we were well down that path when the infamous call came to say, guys, we have a little bit of an issue here, and what can we do to resolve it, you know? So that took a couple weeks with Alonso, and Steph graciously stepped up and out of the way. So I want to be clear with everyone that, you know, he's going to be fine. It's definitely not the thing he chose to do, but he's a bigger man than I in a lot of ways, that he chose to take the high road and make sure everyone else was whole. And I don't mean just me. It was important that Mike Shank Racing stayed in, his spotter stayed in, his engineer stayed with me, and he made sure of all that. So it's just not the surface stuff you read about. There's a lot of stuff underneath the ground level that went on behind the scenes, all typical of the Wilson family.
Will his partners have any involvement with your entry at the 500?
Yeah, they will, actually. One of them, Gapguard, will be on the engine, and a big yellow sign on the engine cover, and I'm proud to represent that brand. I'm proud that they're sticking with Steph through all this, and Steph will have them back at the Speedway very soon. But we'll take care of their group next month, and Gapguard will be on the car. And also AutoNation, Jack Harvey's sponsor for a while, will also be on the car. Additionally, we just signed about 20 minutes ago a company called Kappen Associates in Central Ohio here, a large store fixture company, build interiors like Alta, for example. They've come on board, and we're going to use it as a branding platform and also hospitality for them. They just signed up as an associate-level sponsor. So we have a lot of people that are going to be involved in this on the commercial side. We have a great technical relationship with Andretti. It's been actually, you know, I've always known Michael and his group and Rob Edwards and over there. I've always known him for a while, but I never got to work with him. And this has been a great, pleasant experience dealing with Andretti's. You know, and you can imagine the amount of work that we have to do in a short amount of time. But I really feel like their technical package is probably the best at the Speedway, or certainly one of them. And they welcomed us in like we've been there for 20 years. I'm rambling, guys. I'm sorry.
No, there's a lot to talk about. And you're right. It's a fantastic opportunity. It's one thing to get to enter a car in the Indianapolis 500. It's another to get to partner with the reigning champion. And that wasn't a fluke. They've been the best at this track for several years now. Michael Shank is joining us. Full-time, his team runs in the GTD class in the IMSA WeatherTech Series, the Acura NSX GT3. How much involvement will your crew have with this? Are they crewing this car in partnership with Andretti?
Great question, and I'm proud to say it's a Michael Shank Racing with Andretti Autosport, but the car is completely crewed by MSR staff.
Okay.
So I have 20 full-time people that work on this GT effort. We run it just like an IndyCar, and in fact, I don't know, 60% of my guys are all ex-IndyCar guys, okay, including my team manager, Tim Keene, who ran the shop for Ganassi
sure.
for a lot of years. So we have a lot of depth there, and so my guys will pit it. They will work on it. I'm only bringing in three outside people to work on the car, and a spotter, one of my engineers, and one tire guy, actually. So other than that, the rest of the people are all MSR. It's important for me that we did it that way because I want to be known in this world, in the motorsports world, that we can do anything. Last year, we were at Le Mans 24. We led laps there and finished ninth. At the end of the year, we won the Petit Le Mans in the 12-hour race in our car overall last year. This year, we're going to do the Indy 500. We can do anything that's put in front of us. And I want to make sure we get that point across.
So, quote, we can do anything. What we want to see is more of Michael Shank in the IndyCar series. Do we see it?
We hope so, man. It was important for me to get this first step done. I've got to prove, like anything else I've had to do in this racing world, I've got to go prove myself. I can't just sit and talk. I've got to make it happen. And that's what we're able to do. And the best part is we're able to make it happen with Honda, who is my partner in so many ways. And then having a technical alliance with Andretti's is just, I couldn't ask for a better combination. I mean, I'm just pinching myself.
As a businessman, is it any easier now than it was a few years ago to find the commercial partners you would need to do this on a more regular basis?
Interesting question. I think it's difficult no matter what you do. And, you know, Andretti's have a great commercial department. You know, I know Ray Hall's, they work real hard at commercial side of things. It's not easy. As the series gets better and stronger, like I feel like it is, it becomes better and easier for us to sell. I don't know the exact stance on where they're at with their new 2TV package. That would help us a lot in sales. I'm sure I'll learn a lot more about it as I become integrated over at the Speedway. But certainly for me, and I've said this in an interview I did this week, Jay Fry has been the difference. And I think IndyCar has real hope with Jay at the helm. And Mark Miles, you know, behind him, or above him, I should say. And they really have, they've got leadership in there that know exactly what the teams go through to keep the front door open. Jay Fry ran T teams that he and his wife had to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying something. They know what it takes to unlock that door in the morning and the challenges we face. And you couldn't ask for more than that.
How often have you come to the 500 in recent years?
I've been there. I've come there. I was there with Justin the last time.
Okay.
Justin ran with Dale Coyne his last year, actually. So that would have been 13, I guess.
Have you allowed yourself to yet think what it's going to be like to be involved as a participant?
I don't think it's really hit me yet, to be honest. We're actually flying over there tomorrow. We're going to go out to the Speedway and hopefully see our garage we're going to be in so we can lay the garage out. Get to talk to people in town there, have lunch with my driver and engineer and technical guys in Andretti's. Really start the ball rolling technically now. But it won't hit me until, you know, probably the weekend. You know, we're going to be over there during the Grand Prix, and we're going to be setting the car up and setting the shop up there, and it'll probably hit me then. But, you know, when I look down that straightaway, I think about all the people that have come before me, the drivers that have lost their lives there, the drivers that have risked everything to get to the front. If you think about the moves that have happened down that front straightaway, it blows me away, and that's the reason I've targeted it and tried to get to it for I don't know how long now, 30 years, I guess.
Have you met your driver yet?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, oh yeah, we've talked quite often.
Okay, because it's different circumstances.
Yeah, no, we know each other, but you know, obviously that's going to have a very quick learning curve. I mean, we, you know, when you have those discussions, when you first, you know, driver owners, and you know, the first thing I really like to talk about is expectations, yeah, because we all respect this place and we understand what it can do to you, and not in a good way. So you know, we want to take that pressure off of him. We want him to bring himself up to speed at his speed, rely on the experience that he'll have around him and people. Not be afraid to say when he doesn't know something or when he doesn't feel something. That's okay. I want to give him confidence to start with so that as we build speed during the week, he's ready to start to qualify first and then start working in traffic. You know, Andretti have a brilliant run plan for practices, and they work together, all five or six of the cars at a time, to really get the cars good in traffic, and that's really, truly the key. We can go out and go as fast as we can in qualifying, but in the race, it's always 218 to 220, 221, mm-hmm. You know? And if we can get the car to get through traffic at those speeds, you know, we're going to have something to say at the end of it. With regard to our expectations, though, you know, if we get that thing anywhere around the top 12 on the lead lap, I mean, we are happy and we're going to have a party on Sunday night.
And Jack Harvey's really good, too. He won the Freedom 100, the Oval there. He won six Indy Lights races,
right.
Second in the championship twice by a whisker. Was near the top in GP3. He's won races in GP3, so he's talented. And he's a fellow rookie like Fernando Alonso. How cool is that?
So it's fun. You know, poor Jack probably won't get, or and even our team, you know, we don't get as much as we probably would with Alonso. But I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's humongous news. And I think Zach Brown really put a deal together there. And I'm happy to say we'll be in the same debriefing room with him. And, see how he thinks of the Speedway. I think he's got as much to learn as Jack. You know, obviously, a lot different racing on the oval in this traffic when you get in bad air. So it'll be good to see what happens.
Yeah, in some respects, he actually has more to learn than Jack. You know, having Jack's just kind of experienced the Speedway and the ovals, and you know, it's not quite the same, but some of the aero is at least similar. It's at least something Jack will be. Be able to kind of learn from. But yeah, I think you just hit on it. Sitting in the debriefing room with a two-time world champion and as good as Ryan Hunter Ray's been at that facility, an Indy 500 winner and a series champion, and obviously the experience that Michael and his guys have brought to the program. Cool stuff. We're happy for you, Michael.
Man, I appreciate that. I want to encourage everyone to come out to Speedway and see us. And you know, one of the things that, you know, we're a real open group. You know, if people want to come by and talk or chat or get a picture or whatever, Jack, or, you know, we're here for you. And all the people that have cheered for us and loved and wrote me and said we'd love to see it at the Speed, well, here it is. We're here. So come and see us. And if we have any time at all, we'll make sure we spend it with you.
Fantastic news. Michael, it's great to catch up with you. We'll look forward to seeing you on a more regular basis here next month.
All right, man. Thank you, guys.
Michael Schenck, longtime former driver and car owner in sports cars, and now a participant in the 101st Indianapolis 500. Stay with us. More to come in a moment. Trackside, 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
Some people call me the space cowboy.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
Okay, back at it with at least one more news item I want to get to, and then we'll answer some Twitter questions. This was announced late this morning. As always, good work on the PR department announcing things on Tuesday. And you tried for Fernando Alonso.
I tried. There are people noted that I was evasive, or at least had to lie to you when you said, anything going on tonight?
Nope. And then eventually you told me, well, there's some concern with the Hondas for the test tomorrow at Texas, which was a true issue. You weren't lying.
And that was one of the phone calls.
Yeah, that was maybe news that we'll have to get to another time. So much going on at this point. But today we have a singer for Back Home Again in Indiana for the 101st Indianapolis 500. I'm very familiar with him. I think his last name is pronounced Cornelison, Jim Cornelison. I know of him a little bit. I've seen him from Blackhawks games, which I admit I don't watch much of, but he's done the anthem for Cubs games a couple of times, and I think he did some either in the playoffs or the World Series last year. Just a huge, booming voice, known as the anthem singer for the Blackhawks and in Chicago, and he's going to sing before the 500.
You're right. It's a booming voice, and I guess it's a booming voice even in regular conversation. So we'll have to have some chats along the way, but excited about this opportunity for him.
He has been very well received from what I saw on social media today and Chicago fans. And you know what? There's something to that. That's a good market to tap into a little bit, and you know, maybe they hear about the 500 through this guy's involvement. So normally, there's not a marketing tag to this so much. Yeah, I guess it could be if it's a popular musical person, but this is a market that you tap into potentially.
Well, remember that Alexander Rossi, the reigning Indy 500 champion, was at the Blackhawks game a couple weeks ago, and so I'm sure that had a lot to do with this. They probably grabbed some photos and so forth for usage down the road.
Yeah, a lot of tweets as we go to Twitter at KevinLee23 from last week's show. Jonathan Bishop, epic sandbag from Kurt. No breaking news? Question mark for me? Not really.
Yeah, I'm sandbagging.
Yeah, you know what? But here's one of those where it's important that it does not get out. You can't, and I'm glad you didn't tell me, because then if it gets out, I could be blamed whether I told anyone or not. This is one of those where, and you know, I know Robin Miller and Marshall Pruitt knew, and maybe some of the people at Racer, you know, I don't know if they felt like they had enough to report it, but they knew it was likely to happen. And this is one of those, if you report it, somebody in Formula One might say, ain't going to happen.
Yeah, they had to get the deal completely signed and buttoned up. So, yeah, it was one of those tough ones to keep. I knew over the weekend at the Long Beach race, and boy, I wanted to grab you on about four occasions and just put that bug in your ear, but I couldn't do it and wouldn't do it. But, man, I sure wanted to.
Indy 500 Baby says, previously on track side, you guys said there are two drivers that think they have a ride with Andretti. Was Alonso one of them?
No.
No, it was.
No, it was Stephen Wilson and Jack Harvey. So Jack Harvey gets the deal. We talked about Stephen. But, no, the Alonso thing was clear out of the blue. I know Zach Brown and Michael Schenck both mentioned that it had been kind of discussed and banted around for the last couple weeks, but it certainly hadn't leaked out of the circle. And IndyCar officials, even just a limited number of us, weren't brought into the loop until Sunday.
James Clark says, if Alonso were to win the 500, would his win do much to promote the series race if he never raced an IndyCar again?
I don't know. I mean, you could make that argument. I don't think it's any different than the Kurt Busch discussion 2 years ago. I think what happened with Kurt Busch was about right. He was about a 10th place car, finished sixth. Some people ran out of fuel late in the race, as I recall. Wasn't really the sixth best car, but he was a top 10, 12 car and really held his own, showed that he's capable, that someone with the right amount of preparation and help from his teammates and as I mentioned earlier, the team and the series, everybody working together to make sure he had, you know, a fighting chance and an enjoyable experience could do well. And I think that's where this stands. So If you were asking me how would I like Fernando's experience to go, I'd like to see him on the lead lap, come into the checkered flag, and finish about sixth or seventh. That would be, if you're asking me, both as a fan and as somebody who works at IndyCar, I think that would be the ultimate success story, is even to have him struggle a little bit as Kurt Busch did. Kurt had a crash leading up to the race, kind of got his attention a little bit more, and he was better for it in the race.
Yes, he was.
And he'll be the first to admit that.
I have thoughts on that. Would like to spend more time, but we had two great guests tonight, a lot of other things. So I'm going to save them for last week. I had a lot of people tweeting me, wanting me to comment on the Associated Press column. I may save that for next week. I know we'll have Barber to talk about and getting ready for Phoenix, but we'll try to clear out some space to get into that, the impact that it has on IndyCar, potentially Formula One. You know, what's really big for the 500 this year, I think, is you've got McLaren, you've got Michael Schenck, you've got a new team in Juncos, you've got the Steinbrenner family and Indy Lights involved and interested in IndyCar.
Sure.
You have, this is what matters. This is what we've been talking about, is the potential of new groups coming in and adding to the depth of IndyCar. In a moment, I'll catch up on some late tweets, what we've missed, and more. Trackside 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cobain and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us tonight. One more segment on the big show, and because I went to Ball State and dropped out of my elective math class when they had the first test after the Super Bowl, I'm not good at those types of things. So we have a little more time in this segment than I thought just a few minutes ago, so we can get into a couple of things, including tweets that have come in at Kevin Lee 23, and what I thought was going to have to save until next week. I will go ahead and address many tweets on this, and it has been a firestorm in social media over the last 24 hours or so. Matt was the first to send something last night. Did you read this? Hot garbage. And it's the Associated Press article column, really, from Jenna Fryer last night. And Don at 67 Foyt Fan also said, and can IndyCar's VP of Communications comment on the latest AP opinion piece? And Kurt has left us now, and full disclosure, we taped a lot of tonight's show because it's hard to get someone in London at this time of night, so we thought that was worth going in, and it helped me get the kids to their events tonight, so I'm actually sitting while Jackson finishes up his basketball workout tonight out on the north side of Indianapolis. It's probably best that a team league spokesman doesn't really comment on those kind of things, so I certainly will comment. Now, in all fairness, this is a column. It's an opinion piece, and we are welcome to disagree with the piece. And for those that did not see it, I'll pull it up on my screen here very quickly. The headline from Jenna's story was, "So what that Alonso is racing the Indy 500?" And this obviously has angered quite a few people, and I would disagree with the premise of this. But there are some things that she's accurate about, but the premise of it doesn't matter, I think, is a little bit off base. And what she states, there is, in my opinion, some truth to, in that, yes, it's not as big of a deal if it was Tony Stewart or Danica Patrick, or maybe she mentions Jeff Gordon. We get that. Certainly in America, and certainly in NASCAR world, those would be bigger. This is a bigger international story, though, than any of those others. And those others weren't interested. They had the opportunity, I'm sure, to do this if they wanted to. This was what was available to IndyCar. They weren't able to simply draft someone of their choosing and say, you're going to do the race. I guarantee you Danica Patrick would have been offered the opportunity if she were willing and able to do it, and get the necessary permissions through her team. Same thing for Tony Stewart. They would have rolled out the red carpet for those drivers, but they've chosen not to do it. That would have a bigger impact. No doubt domestically, television ratings, ticket sales in the U.S. However, this is the next best thing, and this has international impact. Keep in mind, too, IndyCar is in the middle of negotiating media rights. And while we're focused on whether it's NBC or ABC and how much money they get and how much network coverage they get, the international rights are very significant. And I will be really surprised, and I don't know how we can measure this, but there is going to be a significant amount more of international interest in this race this year. That's just the way it is. It, even if it's not tangible in America, it still adds to the footprint of this race. It adds to its prestige that someone like Fernando Alonso, still one of the top drivers in his sport, is willing to miss an event. Yeah, I know he was going to finish at the back, and he's probably happy to not deal with that for a weekend. But also some think that Monaco is the one place where that Honda engine and McLaren can actually do decently. But top five is the best. Well, he can do that or better if all goes well in this race. So it's an opinion. We don't have to agree with it. There's no reason to get that angry about it. And where I think Jenna probably missed the mark and set herself up for taking a lot more criticism is just when you have the opportunity to state some facts. And she got one clearly wrong, saying that Alonso is going to be racing with the same underpowered Honda engine here that he is in Formula One. I know she knows better, or at least I assume she knows better, that one has nothing to do with the other, and that's one of the reasons why he is doing this, because it's not the same engine. It may be badged a Honda, and it may be developed by HPD, but it is going to be one that is maybe the superior power unit, and certainly just as good as, or very close to what Chevy has, and give him a real chance. And I would also slightly disagree with the premise that Ricky or Jordan Taylor would have had a bigger impact than Fernando Alonso. I love the Taylors, and I'm big fans, and I really hope Ricky gets an opportunity to race in IndyCar, the Indianapolis 500. And I would have felt that was a big deal, and I think those kinds of things help. They're base hits. They're the things that are significant, but bigger than a two-time world champ. You know, I could go through all the on-air people here at this radio station based in Indianapolis. This is a sports station. They're sports guys, Grady and Big Joe, JMV, Dan Dockage, and I would ask them who Ricky Taylor is. My guess is it's zero. It's me and Kurt and David that know who Ricky Taylor is, and that's no offense to Ricky Taylor, but that's where sports car racing is in America right now. But they've all heard at least of Fernando Alonso. Again, though, this is a bigger deal internationally, so I think it's very significant. Is it Nigel Mansell? No, it's not, but it is still a very big, big deal, and it's a good thing for Formula One, too. This is going to get America maybe a little bit more intrigued with Formula One. Now we know who one of their people will be. 6 million people will watch this, and, oh, there's a Formula One driver. Maybe I'll check out their next race. Xander asks, what are the chances Alonso races the Indy GP? They are nil. The Spanish Grand Prix is that weekend, his home race. He's not skipping that, but no matter where that was, he wasn't going to skip another Formula One event for an IndyCar race. He's done road racing. He needs to get used to being on the oval. Can't wait to see him this weekend. The forecast is starting to look better, looking like, from what IndyCar weatherman says, some rain Saturday night, Sunday morning. Maybe makes things even more interesting. Maybe a little bit damp on Sunday through the race. But cooler on Sunday with a high of 73, highs in the mid-80s, and really nice on Friday and through the day on Saturday. That's all the time we have for tonight. I thank you so much for joining us. Thanks especially to Zach Brown of McLaren and Mike Schenck for joining us on the show. We're back either Monday or Tuesday, depending on what's happening with the Pacers next week. For Kurt Cavan and David Deering, I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks so much for joining us on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.